Well, now that we have everybody, I'd like to call this meeting of the Board of Directors to order. Can you do a roll call for us, please, Laura?
Director Gatchel.
Here.
Director Ohelski.
Present.
Director Womack.
Present.
Vice President Sesenia.
Here.
President Fourcroy.
I'm here. All right, thank you everyone for being here. Tonight we're gonna get started. We have two general action items. 2A is looking at the draft water rate study. So Ron, can you start us out?
Absolutely, thank you very much. Before I get started, I know three of the directors have seen the presentation. So make sure you ask questions. There's no action tonight. What I'm looking for are when we hit the decision points, some direction so we can then move to our April meeting for tentative approval before we go out to Prop 218 notice. So with that, Laura, could you go to the next slide, please? Really quick, we'll go through a little bit of the background. Some of you remember our last rate study was performed back in 2016, 2017. It was a volunteer group, which consists of Rob Miller, Richard Margetson, and myself when I was on the Utility Advisory Committee. The board at that time asked us to analyze capital requirements, the revenue for capital requirements, revenues for reserves, and how to meet our operational requirements. They asked for a three-year rate increase, which was approved in June 2017 and went into effect July 2017. And we had a step tiered up for our capital reserve, which is also referred to as net revenue, $500,000 the first year, $700,000 the second, and $900,000 the third year. Next slide, please. This is what the rates were. 2016-17 was the base year we were working off of. You can see tier one was quite low. Actually, all the tiers were quite low. The rate increase then was over 3 years, as I had mentioned. But by the third year, we had reached our goal of approximately that $900,000 for net revenue and for our capital reserves. So at that point, the board decided not to take that third year of the rate increase. So the rates have been the same since 2018-2019. Next slide. So here's the decision points, and we'll go through them one by one, and I want to stop after each one so we can talk about them a little bit so everyone understands. And as you can see down at the bottom, I have what the recommendations were from the various groups. So net revenue, what net revenue should be included in the model? Like I said, last time it was the 500, 700, and 900,000. So for the purpose of this discussion, net revenue means revenue available after expenses, debt service, administrative costs, and non-capital reserves are funded. And so these net revenues can then be used for fund our projects, our capital projects. What we did at the working group level is we revisited what we thought our capital needs might be based on past performance from our past years. So that's where we came up with the recommendation of $800,000, and I'll get into that in just a moment. The UAC and FAC agreed with the recommendation. Next slide, please. So to kind of explain why we came up with the 800,000, we put together this cash flow analysis, and I'll go through it on the different columns, where the starting balance is what we currently have in reserves, plus about $700,000 in cash that is in our general checking. Our goal is to maintain at least $1 million for the ending balance. And this is to really anticipate unanticipated costs, things that might come up. So we don't want to run the reserves down under $1 million if we can help it. So we have two scenarios here. I've told you we have a pending grant from the Department of Water Resources for our program CUEL. So we ran two scenarios, one with that grant money and one without. And as you can see, we have our starting balances. The capital expenditures are based of what's in our five-year capital plan. So this is our anticipated cost out over the next 5 years in capital. As you can see in the one column, we have the grant, which is about $1.6 million, and we spread that out over the life of that project. And then the revenue we would be receiving from our rates at the 800,000, and then what our ending balance would be projected to be. So you can see with the grant version, we stay very healthy through the five-year plan. Going down to the non-grant version, it's the same scenarios, but as you can see in the grant column, everything's zero. And so also at what you can see down there in year four, we do dip below that $1 million threshold. But that's why the rate working group is strongly suggesting that we revisit rates in the next two to three years. And there's other reasons, which I'll explain as we go through the decision points. Any questions about this before we move on? If you could go back a slide, thanks. If not, we'll move on to the next decision point. And this one has always been a little bit tricky for the board because, you know, we do get a Zone A property tax, which is a general revenue that is assessed against all properties within the district boundary. So now we need to decide, I'll show you this later and how that works in the rate model, but we'll have to make a decision on how much to include into the rate model for on our revenue side. The working group kind of threw out the $50,000 to kind of back up, I'm sorry. Back when we went through this in 2017, the board made a decision to kind of decrease how much was Zone A money was going to Fund 500, the water fund, with ultimately going down to a max of 50%. Again, this was a decision. It's not written in stone, and it can be changed by this board. So in honoring kind of where the discussion had gone back in 2017, the working group recommended $50,000, but we definitely wanted some input from the committees and the board on this. UAC, for instance, thought it should be increased more than 50,000. They thought that was too low and up to that 50% mark that had been decided by the board in 2017. Just for reference, the past revenue from Zone A, I think, was $262,000. So that kind of gives you a perspective of how much revenue is available. FAC, they weren't as distinct on the recommendation, but they were generally okay with the higher amount. But they wanted us to try to link it to community benefit, like BMC expenditures. I explained that, you know, the CSD has been taking more of a lead role on certain projects, like the recycled water facility planning study will be the lead agency on that grant. And there's other things because we're a governmental entity, will need to be lead agency. So they were thinking if we could link a higher amount to something that had community-wide benefit, that would be the best there. And again, I don't know if there's any questions at this point. We'll recap these at the end of the presentation so we can make some decisions and you can provide direction to me. So if there's no questions on that, we will move to the next. This one was very critical. We had to kind of estimate what the water sales would actually be, you know, what the consumption would be. So I put together, you know, this kind of historical perspective. You can see what it was back when we were doing the analysis and how it's kind of gone up and down a little bit, and then went up quite a bit in 2020, 2021, which we associated really with the COVID situation and people working from home and children being homeschooled. So what I did is I went back and looked at the, you know, the working group said, yeah, maybe we should look at a different number. And so I went back and looked at this fiscal year's water, which has been down. And then I projected out the last few months, which I, you know, obviously we don't have water use records for yet. And that estimation came out to 210,000 units. Both FAC and UAC thought this was a good sound money number based on some of the information that's coming up here in just a minute. Any comments or questions about the assumption on water sales? Okay, next slide, please. This one would probably got the most discussion. The inflation rate that we should use in years two and three of the rate increase. In our last rate analysis, we used 3%. I think it was okay. There's a lot of other factors that were mixed in that kind of impacted revenue. And I don't think inflation, I could flesh out what inflation really did for over that, but inflation was fairly low as well. The working group decided to use 4% in the calculation. Since we do know that utility-related inflation is higher than, like a consumer price index, for instance, and typically that can be 1% to 2% higher. The working group recommendation was 4%, but that's open for discussion. We did try to look at what the economic forecasts are, and there's been a lot of news about inflation being higher this year, but the indicators moving out are less clear. And so we don't know if it's going to come back down or where that number will end. So the UAC said, well, let's look at the impacts on revenue using a higher inflation rate, which I did run some numbers that if we raised it to 5%, the first year we would be in a deficit of over $10,000 and year two, $50,000. Not terrible numbers, but at the same time, there is an impact. Excuse me. If you raise it up to 7%, there's quite a bit more. In year one, it would impact it about $50,000, and year two, it close to $100,000. So 7% would be pretty dramatic. And so that's where we were trying to figure out, we don't want to overcharge based just on, raise rates just based on inflation. And again, it goes back to that recommendation of looking at rates in the next 2 to 3 years, really kind of going back. So this is one of those decision points we just weren't clear on. And the uncertainty of the economy and inflation are definitely up in the air right now. Any questions on that?
I have a question. So you're referencing the CPI here. So what was the CPI in the last year?
Last year, I don't think I've run it. When we ran it, because we're coming up to running all those numbers for our like fire tax and others. So we haven't looked at the CPI for the most current year. Before it was below 2%, if you're looking back at.
It's being predicted at 3.5 right now for this 2022.
All right. Thank you, Troy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I think that helps put some reference there. Thank you.
Let's move on to the next one. This one, it was hard for the working group because what we were trying to do is keep the base fee as low as possible. But you'll see in a coming slide the importance of that base fee in our revenue stability. And if you probably didn't look at it, but if you looked at a year three of the rate increase that was approved back in 2017, the base fee was going to be as high as $76. So we were trying to stay under that if we could. And so what we came up with was raising the base fee from $70 to $73 the first year and then by a dollar each of the subsequent years. So we end up at $75. And because we want to keep the base fee, low water users and low income users, which typically are low water users, are impacted by that base fee. But both UAC and FAC recommended as we presented. So if there's not any questions there, we'll get into some of the more numbers stuff.
I have a quick question on that.
Sure.
So the total cost that a customer's paying is base fee plus water rate, correct?
Correct.
So when you're saying 4%, so are we if you take the base fee plus the water rates, is that combination that's rate rising at 4% a year?
I'll get to that when we get into how the impact to the customer. The 4% is strictly what we were just talking about was for inflation, and that would be applied to operational costs and admin costs. So that's how we're going to estimate how much our operational costs will go up. Mm-hmm. So that's not tied to the actual rate increase percentage.
Is that being applied to capital?
No. So what will happen there, since those aren't part of the rate model, the capital programs, when we go out and we Let's say when we're doing the pipeline for a program C well, for instance, we'll see the impact of inflation, but I think there's more supply chain influences there. Where operationally, we're not as impacted by supply chain and availability of supplies. Maybe a little bit in chemicals, but really, you know, labor and, you know, just some of the things that we do aren't as impacted. So it doesn't include capital. Capital is, it's kind of standalone animal.
Yeah. So we have a capital plan that goes out in time, though.
Right. So
are we escalating those numbers as
we? We will have to escalate those numbers. And that's what we'll do during the budget process. Okay. So we understand that, you know, those numbers that I showed you before probably aren't accurate. We're not sure to what degree, because we just did a reassessment of the capital costs last year during the budget process. So we're not that far behind, but we don't know where we're at right now, because it's been with the supply chain issues, it's just been so hard to predict. And I know you're aware of that, Matthew, and some of the things you've been doing, you know, professionally. So
yeah, I'm seeing projects that were put on hold a year ago and brought back to life this year or late last year. 20, 25, 30% increases in the overall project.
Right. And so what I think will happen is if we're starting to see those types of cost increase, we'll scale back the capital plan, and then we'll have to go back and look at our rates in the next 2 years, possibly. It's really what we're trying to do is balance here. So we're not doing, you know, rate shock to the community, but we can still achieve the revenue we need to keep going operationally and with our capital program.
Yeah, I understand that. Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. And just one question, Ron. I think on the original 3 year ago study, the final base fee was going to be at $76, I think, at 2019, 2020. You guys decided not to do that.
Correct.
But you're reevaluating now, and the final would be $75, I think.
Correct. And the main difference is we're not shooting for that $900,000.
Yeah.
If we were going to shoot for that, things would be different.
Okay.
Okay, next slide. Now we'll get into the numbers, and you can hopefully maybe see a little bit more how all this is put together. Basically, our rate calculator is a fairly large spreadsheet that was developed by the working group during our last effort. Really saved us a lot of time. And it allowed us to kind of play around with the scenarios, because you can put in different rates and the ripple effect goes through. You can change inflation. You can change a lot of everything that's in the blue boxes, basically. But one of the first things I had to do was calibrate the model to our current, to 2020, 2021, where we have complete data. And the main thing was over there in the yellow, we had to calculate how much water we actually sell in each tier. And our billing system doesn't have a report that can produce that. So we had to kind of go back through formulas to analyze number of bills in the amount of water that was sold in those tiers. Anyway, long story short, we were able to calculate it. Strangely enough, the percentages were fairly close to back in 2017. So things haven't changed that much. So today you see those are our rates in the blue. The total units sold down there by the red arrow going over to the revenue, you can see it's about $1.7 million from water revenue sales. And here's where you can see where the base year is a very important $1.1 million for, you know, about $2.8 million, $2.9 million in revenue from water sales. I do want to emphasize that the calculator isn't going to get down to such a granular fine-tuned number, but it's really been working great on getting you very close. So I want you to understand it's not going to be exact, I guess. So then you have other revenues, which are the property tax, you know, water service charges. We had anticipated, recycled water revenue back then, but it's still in the calculator in case it ever comes. And then you get your other revenue totals, which then get you down to total revenue. And so as I was trying to recalculate, I was really able to get very close to the exact revenues that we actually had from 2020-21. Next slide, please. Next, we get into expenses. Per policy, we have to fund at least $57,000 a year to general contingency. Rate stabilization reserve is fully funded. We've kind of moved basin management, water conservation into the O&M budget. Back then, they weren't there, but that's what we recommended. We have our restricted funds, which is our debt service for iBank. And then here, I left this intentionally blank because then I plugged in our operational costs, our overhead, and then it does the math between revenue and expenses. And this was the net revenue, which was pretty almost right on how much we actually had from that fiscal year. And these are numbers from our audited financials. So you can see it calculates revenue versus expenses to come down to our magic number down here. Next slide, please. So then we recalibrated it to the 210,000, the assumption that we're not going to sell, almost 216,000. So then that's basically a formula to use these percentages to come up with this calculation to give us the revenue by tier. And then you can see, then we started working the rates in the model. We added the base fee to come up with our revenues and then our projected revenues. Down in the other revenues, we plugged in the $50,000 here and then estimated other costs to come up with an increase in revenue, overall revenue by 4.23%, which is closer to what you're thinking about here, Matthew, on the percent increase. And this would be for year one, remember. So anyway, go to the next slide. Then on expenses, we plugged in the 800,000. And since I'm not going to show you years two and three, I want you to remember we plugged in the 4% on these numbers for years two and three. And then theoretically, this would be zero down here, this $906. So what the calculator is showing us that the rates that I just showed you above on the previous slide versus our estimated expenses would just about hit the mark on what we would expect for net revenue, that $800,000. Any questions on that before I move into kind of how the rates look? Next slide then, please. So here's the three-year rate increase. And again, this assumes the 800,000 net revenue, the 210,000 units sold, 4% inflation, base fee increase, and 50% property tax. In the years two and three, here's our base year. Years two and three, the net revenue kind of dips about, or it is increased about $4,000 here and decreases about $4,000 here. So that's where we didn't really hit that close number, but we were able to balance it out here in years two and three. So here you can see basically the rates. And the other thing what we did this time is we really balanced between the tiers that they were equally impacted. So we were trying to hit the same impact on every rate going across instead of just adding dollars because they look good and they hit the revenue number. We did balance the increase by tier as well. Next slide, please. So here it kind of comes down to, our average residential water customers use about 11 units bi-monthly. That's every 2 months. So if you look at our current year, the base fee, the volume charge for that 11 units would be that $75.25 for a total bill of about $148. So then if you go in and do that same calculation across, you can see the bi-monthly increase for a customer would be the first year $6.40, a percent increase of about 4.3%. And again, it goes down each year to an accumulative total for that person that now pays $148 would go up to about $162 or a $13.80 bi-monthly increase over that 3 year period. Next slide, please. So any questions up to now? And then we'll circle back to these decision points and kind of go back through them. Any questions yet on the methodology? Okay, then let's go back. And this is where I need for the board to weigh in so I can complete the analysis. And I will, I'll show you the schedule on the next slide on how we're going to complete the project here. So we have net revenue goal of $800,000. Are there any discussion on how that looks to the board?
I think it looks good.
I think we should take public comment right here.
Okay, let's do that then.
Yeah, let's open this to public comment.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're on your phone, please dial *9. And if you're on your computer, please raise your hand. There is no public comment at this time.
And if I could right now, Matthew, if Richard, if you have anything you want to add at this point, unmute your, or how would he unmute himself on the phone, Laura?
He should be unmuted now.
Okay, Richard, do you have any comments you'd like to make?
No, I want to kind of emphasize that there's a number of areas where if we ended off in the anticipated CPI or expenses on the operations side or something, there's areas in here that I think will buffer that in the future. Like we put in the $50,000 for property taxes. If that was moved to half, and I'm just saying if it was, there's $80,000 additional there, 80 some thousand additional there. This is a very conservative rate study, and basically based on that we're not getting the grant that we're looking for, the 1.6 million, 1.6, Ron, 1.7?
Yeah, 1.6, yes.
Yeah, it's based on those type of things. So, however we tweak it, I think is okay, but I think for at least the next 2 years, maybe three, we're probably good, and we could end up being really good on the revenue side, especially if that grant comes through. I think that's it at this point. I'll listen to director's comments, and Ron, if you want me to weigh in after that, I will.
All right, great. Thank you, Richard. And I do really want to thank Richard and Rob, again, volunteers, and we put a lot of thought into this, so thank you. Okay, so we'll go back to the decision points. It appears net revenue goal, 800,000. Am I kind of hearing consensus that that's a good number for us to shoot for?
I think that's a great number. We have history on that now. We know what has been working on that. So yeah, I think that's a good number.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. The baseline number of units, 210,000 units. Does that sound like a pretty good estimate for water sales?
Yes, to me, yes.
Okay. Inflation rate, which I think that's been one of the ones that has been the most concerning, but and I appreciate, Troy, that you weighed in on what this last year looks like, because that does help put it in perspective.
Yeah, last year was 7.5%, which was the largest 12-month increase since 1982. This year is predicted to be 3.5. I think with the Fed going to be raising interest rates, and interest rate policies is going to combat inflation. So if we're looking at 1-2%, usually higher than the CPI, we might want to bump up to like 4.5 to 5.5 range to be conservative.
Any other thoughts?
As you explained about capital projects, but I really do think we're going to end up with some sticker shocks here shortly. But I also understand balancing that with shocks to our customers. We don't want to just raise rates and then have it too high and not need the money in 2 years. So I'm okay with staying with the 4% based on the rate study. I think like Richard was saying, there's some cushions there, and we've already taken some conservative assumptions.
And I think you said
earlier. I think the grant is the kind of the wild card that, and it looks good for us. So I think that allows us to maybe not be quite so conservative here.
You said, what was the, you did some analysis on the inflation, right? So if we did 4.5 or 5, it's not that big of a swing, right?
Not that big. The 5 you increase in year one, we're down about $10,000, or year two, I mean, I'm sorry. Year three, we're down about $50,000.
Okay. So even if we stayed at 4 and it did jump to 5,
it's not going to be
terrible, right?
Right, exactly. And like Richard said, I think we've got other things in there we could play with to make up that deficit in the future years, especially. Let's say year two inflation is up, Zone A money may be available to help compensate for that.
Okay.
That's a good point. I mean, Zone A is at our discretion, the board's discretion.
Right. And right now, 50,000 is what we've put into the model, which is low compared to past years.
But, and, you know, just to circle back on Zone A, I know we'll get there in a second, but that's community-wide money, right? That's not just water customer money.
Correct. So am I hearing 4% and that we just watch it closely?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm good with 4.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Base fee, any heartburn with the increase in the base fee? Again, that's really to help with revenue stability.
I think it looks good.
Yeah.
I mean, you raised it by $1 a year. I think that's kind of the minimum.
Yeah. First year we did a $3 bump, and then it's $1 a year. And again, we are trying to keep it under that third year increase that we were seeing back in 2017. And then finally, Zone A.
Chuck, do you have anything to say about Zone A?
I wish I'd have been a little more vocal at UAC. I think I've enjoyed the fact that that committee kind of runs itself, and you know, for a while it seemed like steering the discussion, not steering it, but facilitating, making sure it happened. And it's like, it doesn't even need to happen. I don't need to do anything anymore, but I wish I'd have been a little more vocal about some of the arguments that I heard. I think the one new one was that since approximately half, 48% of the water customers are CSD customers, perhaps 48% of the property tax should go toward the water revenue, the water revenues. And to that, I wish I'd have spoken up and said, so the other residents, the Golden State residents and Sunset Terrace, our money would go to parks and what else? And then where is the contribution from the CSD water customers toward those other funds that those property taxes go to? So I just don't know how you can separate that out at all. The end goal should be no property A tax contributions to water revenues, except as a bailout, something we have to do to make sure that we keep our capital program on target, meet our basin management goals, that kind of thing. I'm still firmly convinced of that. But that said, the 50,000 this year, I think it's a good number. We're working our way. We're chipping down to what my goal would be. And that's what I have to say. And thank you for asking, Matthew.
Welcome. I think the one part about for me that is muddles that a little bit is something that Ron mentioned earlier, is about as we take the role of lead agency in more projects going forward, especially, you know, looking out, you know, right now we're just in a study, but as far as alternative sources of water in the future. So at that point, it would be, water does become a community benefit. So in those cases, I could see directing some of these funds that direction.
That is a good counter argument, and a reason that maybe we need to think about just keeping some of that property tax revenue in there. We are just by necessity picking up some of the role there that, you know, it's not so we don't have that that entity form, the joint powers or whatever it would be, that we all just evenly contribute and share expenses. We're all kind of kicking in as we can, and so I understand that. That's a good point.
So I think I can justify the $50,000 a year towards mm-hmm. those goals, personally.
I agree.
I don't think I'm going to support going up to 50% of, I'm not going to support 50% of Zone A property tax going there.
Yeah, when the FAC talked about this, can you guys hear me okay?
Yep, I hear you.
Yeah, when the FAC talked about it, one of the key items was that we have to remain a viable water purveyor. So being a viable water purveyor is the most important thing, you know. And I think that using those numbers are the best way to go at this point. And we can always change them if we have to in the future.
We have to charge what it costs to purvey the water and keep the system operational.
And we've been able to do that. I'm so thankful that we are stepping up, meeting our obligations. If the grant comes through, we're going to be in even better shape. But it's been just wonderful to see as the challenges that are thrown at us through 10th Street Tank last year and the new work at 16th, we are stepping up. And that's, again, thanks to the three R's. This is complicated stuff, and you don't want to be wrong with it. We talked about, you know, inflation rate, and maybe we can revisit in the year two and three. But I don't, once that 218 passes, I mean, we're kind of locked in. We want to get this right.
Yeah, and I don't want to be afraid if we don't have it right that we don't, we go back out. We ask for what we need. Mm-hmm. I want to be clear about that.
And well, all you can do is make your best, you know, your best guess at it and go with that.
Right. I think we have a very sound analysis. And with Rob and Richard assistance, I think this is a good analysis.
And I hope we've got a little bit of trust based on the fact that we passed on that last rate increase,
right?
You know, when we knew we could get through without it, and hopefully that bought something.
I wanted to point out also, I mean, we're even at 2024, 2025, we're not even at that last step that we didn't take. I think the, was it 76 was the base fee in that scenario? And I think the tier one had a tier one written down as $7 versus $6.65. So we're really just prolonging that out in time.
Yeah, you know, but like Chuck said, I don't know a lot of the people that we're purveying the water to are even aware of that, to tell you the truth.
Oh, no, the kind of good news, you know, you let go. It shouldn't right. that be the way that happens? And yeah, I speak up when I'm annoyed and tend not to when I'm happy with people.
Well, we do have that in our pocket as a selling point.
Yes, we do.
We do, but it's still increase, right? We're talking about rate increases. So.
Well.
Have to charge what it costs to purvey.
Yes.
Yep. And upkeep.
Yep.
And I think it's this is a good approach that we're, Ron's trying to price in small increases along the way. So it's not like some big sticker shock if we're wildly wrong and needed to raise a bunch of money. I mean, I think people are used to things going up a little bit over time. I think it's just easier.
I'm good with all of the numbers as proposed personally. And yeah, thank you, Ron. Thank you, Richard. Thanks for being here tonight. And also thanks to Rob. We haven't seen him in a while.
I'll pass that along. He came to UAC.
Okay. Missed him.
So anyway, great. Well, it sounds like we have consensus on the decision points. Next slide, Laura. I'll kind of recap what we're going to do next.
I just have one more question, Ron.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Something that just came to mind was in our last board meeting with the solid waste assignment, we mentioned possibly needing rate increases to help with Senate Bill, was the food waste 1383. Is that a separate exercise and not part of the system analysis, right?
Correct. And I'm going to give a little more of an update on that during my general manager's report. Okay. Those are separate.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So we've gone through UAC, FAC, and now board input. Like I said, I had planned to make sure we didn't have a decision or an action tonight on purpose in case something changed. So we'll come back through UAC, FAC, and I'll just recap that the board has agreed with and really, excuse me, talk about, you know, the inflation and the Zone A money. But I'll be back on April 7th asking for an action for tentative approval. We'll get the Prop 218 notice out by April 15th. So we have a 45-day period that we are required to have before we go to public hearing, which will be June 2nd. And then we'll have the effective date be July 1. So if there's no other questions, that's the end of the presentation. And thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Ron. Okay, let's move on. We have another general action item, another discussion regarding our in-person versus hybrid versus remote meetings. Let Ron start out. I know you have some new information, so maybe that goes to Jeff. I'm not sure.
Yeah, go to the next slide real quick. And I just wanted to give the real brief history and then we'll move into what's actually happened today because our counsel, Jeff Minery, and I had a conversation late this afternoon about what's going on at the state level. So anyway, real quick, as you know, the district and committee meetings have been held remote except for a couple of exceptions since 2020. It seems like we're moving quickly with changes in the state guidelines. We weren't sure until Jeff pointed out to me this afternoon about remote meetings in the January executive order. Jeff, maybe if you could jump in here real quick and explain what we discussed this afternoon, if you don't mind.
Sure. Thank you, Ron, directors of the board. So I talked to Ron today about this, and as was described to you by Director Ohilski at the last meeting in his Brown Act presentation, the governor's orders didn't do away with the Brown Act or modify it. It just suspended the terms that exist and control how regular meetings are held on January. So your board to facilitate these types of online virtual meetings, AB 361 is the governor's order, essentially the assembly bill suspending those provisions, which remained intact and had been extended from time to time. On January 5th, the governor signed a new executive order that extended the virtual meeting protocols for local governing bodies through the end of March. So as we currently sit today at the end of March, the provisions that allow these virtual meetings will expire and we will be going back to in-person meetings with all the regular rules requiring a quorum in person, allowing teleconferencing, but requiring certain noticing provisions, identifying the location of the board member who may be appearing remotely, that sort of thing. So unless there's a change between now and March 31st, I think we have to operate under the assumption that we are going back to the old rules. And I'll answer any questions. It's a little rambling, I know, I'm sorry.
No, and so really that, I didn't have that information last week, of course, when I put this report together. So that really kind of changes the options for us. So go to the next slide, please. I did want to point out that the boardroom now has streaming capabilities. Laura, before her departure, we pieced all the equipment together and had the last hookup done today. So that would allow for either hybrid or traditional meetings. When I say traditional, we used to have in boardroom meetings and broadcast it on channel 21. Now we can have a choice. And I guess go to the next slide. There we go. So really one and two are choices, unless something changes, like Jeff said, unless the governor extends it for another period of time. That we revert back to traditional, that means the board is in person, committees would be in person, and we'd stream it on Zoom and Facebook, but for viewing only. That's how the old Channel 21 model was. You know, people could watch, but they couldn't participate. So now with our hybrid approach, we can include Zoom participation. So that would be number two. And I know board members in the past have said it'd be great if we had this ability. So that is an option. What we can do through the month of March, though, and Jeff and I talked about the resolution to, you know, be able to have remote meetings. We felt we might as well go ahead and that's on our consent agenda. Go ahead and pass that in case things, when things change, and two, we could have UAC still remote this month since it's in the middle of March. So with that, are there any questions? And I guess we could go to public comment first. Matt, if you want.
Yeah. Yeah, this is some good information. Glad we got that update when we did. It's perfect timing. So yeah, let's go to public comment.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're on your phone, please dial *9. And if you're on your computer, please raise your hand. All right, Tom, you just have to unmute yourself.
Hello, I just support any option where the public is able to participate remotely to make it as convenient as possible. Thank you, that is all.
Okay, thank you, Tom.
There's no further public comment at this time.
Okay.
So I guess I'd like to clarify. So our choices are the one and two and the of revert to back the way it was, or all the board and committee members have to be in person, but the public can function remotely, which is an idea I like too. And then the other three choices are no longer choices. Is that...
Well, you know, as Jeff mentioned, you know, a board member could Zoom in, but then we'd have to do the notifications.
Then just do noticing. Okay.
Yeah, posting and notifications.
And then, you know, like if Marshall wanted to Zoom in, he'd have to notice where he was and people could come in.
Correct. Well, and it can be, does it still have to be within the district or could it be anywhere?
You don't have to be within the district to be able to participate like that.
Okay, that's nice.
But you do have to post the agenda and allow people in if they want to come.
Correct.
For me, I'm looking forward to going back in person. I really think the in-person provides the best forum for discussions. I think we're doing a pretty good job at the board level, but I could see definitely in some of the committee meetings where I think it would have been really helpful to be in the same room with everybody.
Yeah, I agree with Matthew. I think we should just go back to in person, because I think that the interaction is an important aspect of it. And if we're not able to have that interaction, I just think we're losing a whole bunch of things, quite frankly, because a lot of places where you get is because you're able to interact back and forth, back and forth. If you're on Zoom, you can't really do that. And every hybrid Zoom meeting I've been in, quite frankly, has been a failure.
Well, wait, when you say that, because I kind of like the idea of the public being able to participate remotely. When you say hybrid Zooms are a failure, does that mean with some of the board members being remote?
No, with the public, because there can be no interaction, and your ability to ask questions and respond to mm-hmm. body language, for lack of a better term, is non-existent if you're doing Zoom.
Well, I see that, but I also just see, I guess, the convenience of someone being able to say you're watching the kids, you can take 10 minutes and join a meeting and provide comment without having to get in the car and get down there. I think that's valuable.
Yeah. I would add the hybrid approach for the public as well. Just there's going to be some people that are still not wanting to be in an indoor in person, even if we're doing different things with the pandemic stages. But still allows the public to comment and participate, even if they're not uncomfortable or they have health issues and they're not comfortable being in that setting, at least in the near term.
Yeah, thanks, Troy. I personally agree with what you're saying, Marshall. I really do think that in-person is the best way to have a discussion. But I think I'm going to lean more towards the hybrid approach just for the accessibility for folks that have their hands full.
Well, it's the new normal, if you want to look at it that way, but I'm still opposed to it, so.
So if I could ask if we can get consensus on either one or two, please.
Are you talking for both the board and the committees, or just the board?
Well, it can be for both.
Both.
And that's again,
I definitely think in person works much, much better at committees.
So our choices, though, are to A, go back to how they were with no remote public participation, or B, do a hybrid where the committees and the board, we meet in person, but the public can choose to participate remotely. So those are the two choices. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah,
no, correct. We're going to have to discuss it.
Then I prefer a hybrid for the public.
Yeah, I also support option two.
I do as well.
Same for me. Number two.
And Marshall, I'm not sure how you want to weigh in. I think
No, I'm not.
But what I can say is we can start with hybrid, and we can always change our minds. So it's something we can work through. If we feel for public participation, it would like it maybe at the committee meetings it would be better. We can change our policy or direction.
I think you have a majority outlook here to go with hybrid meetings for now.
Yeah. And, well, you do have to wait to see what the governor is going to order by the end of the month, because he may just go with one.
Doesn't that only apply to the board or the committee, Jeff? I mean, the public could be anywhere.
I think we can work so that the public can be anywhere. I don't see a prohibition at this time. However, to give, I guess there is some uncertainty. We know that it was January 5th when the governor took action to extend the legislation that was expiring on January 31st. So now we have the legislation expiring on March 31st. It's possible. I could see that there could be a new order that would keep Zoom as the primary option. That may still be an option in April.
And the legislature may, you know, pass an amendment to the Brown Act too. I mean, it's just at this point, we don't know really what the outcomes are going to be for sure.
Yeah, but if we agree to go with a in-person board and committee meetings with a hybrid approach for the public, there's not, regardless of what the governor or legislature does, we would be allowed to do that.
We can do that.
Okay. So for me, regardless of what the governor does, I still support option two.
Can I ask for clarification about the March UAC meeting? Do you want that to be live?
I think that kind of should be up to Chuck.
We're a little bit uncertain right now. Maybe I unless the governor tells us we have to go live, maybe we should just plan on remote at this point.
Well, we'll do that, Chuck, and we'll check in. But like I said, the March UAC meeting, because we're going to pass the resolution, will be covered for remote.
Okay.
So I have a question. Are we going to do outreach to the committee members to know they know they have to come in? Because, you know, FAC already had their meeting, so we didn't discuss it there.
We, you know, Laura and I will make sure they're informed. Definitely.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Move on. Agenda item three, public comment for items not on this agenda. Do we have any public comment?
If you'd like to make a public comment for an item not on the agenda and you're on your phone, please dial *9. And if you're on your computer, please raise your hand. There is no public comment at this time.
Okay, thank you. Moving on, we will move to administrative and committee reports. We'll start off with the fire department report, I think.
I'm not seeing Paul or anyone from the fire department on.
Okay. I'm not either.
Then we will move to the sheriff's department report.
Good evening. This is Senior Deputy McFarland with the Sheriff's Office. I apologize, Sergeant Dowdy had to step away. So I'll be going over the calls for service numbers for the Los Osos District. This year, in this time frame, we had 62 calls for service, where last year's numbers were 78. For assault calls, we had 4 calls for service. For public disturbance calls, that could be anything from a barking dog to a loud music noise complaint or someone yelling, riding a skateboard down the street, causing just the noise disturbance. We had 39 calls. Burglary calls, which include residential and vehicles, we had 3. Thefts or petty thefts, we had 9. Vandalism calls for service, there were 4. We had a single mail theft call, 3 phone scam calls, 9 calls of suspicious circumstances, which just could be a like a prowler or someone walking around that didn't fit in the neighborhood that they did not recognize that they gave us a call for service about. Enforcement stops, which can include traffic or pedestrian stops, were 33. And then preventative patrol activity, which are patrol requests or audible alarms, were 34. Are there any questions about the calls for service in this time frame?
Questions? No, thank you very much for being here.
Appreciate the report. Thank you very much.
Have a good night. Let's move on to the CHP report.
Hello, guys. Can you hear me?
Yep. Hear you loud and clear.
Okay, perfect. Jason Grimm here with the California Highway Patrol. I'm standing in for Greg, so thank you guys for having me tonight. We just have five items to report. The first will be a DUI traffic collision that occurred on February 19th at 12:10, just after midnight. It was on Los Osos Valley Road at Palisades. It was a two-vehicle non-injury collision. And then we have another traffic collision. It was a minor injury traffic collision involving two vehicles. It was on February 3rd at 2:38 in the afternoon, Los Osos Valley Road, about 2 to 3 miles west of Foothill. Another minor injury two-vehicle traffic collision on February 13th at 6:15 p.m. It was at Los Osos Valley Road near Foothill. And a two-vehicle non-injury traffic collision on the 25th at 1:15 p.m. It was at 6th and Santa Maria Avenue. And then we had a hit-and-run, two-vehicle hit-and-run on the 26th at 8:45 p.m. It was at Los Osos Valley Road and Doris Avenue. And those were our incidents that we had.
Thank you. Thanks for the report. I think we asked last time, but when do you think we can get the speed sensor trailer back in town?
I know Greg and I have talked about it. We went out and assessed the area near the school. We kind of had a hard time looking at where a good spot would be because of the stop signs near the corner. Sure. But we would like to get it back out there. So I think we had it on Los Osos Valley Road for a week or maybe two last month, or it was the end of January. I can't remember. Where would you guys prefer to have it?
I think generally there's been, when we've talked before, and everybody can on the board can chime in, but, near the schools, we have Monarch and Loams and Baywood, and then coming through town, LOVR at 9th and 10th Street. Those are spots where a lot of people are zipping around the corners while kids are trying to cross the street there.
Okay. Any other input?
Look like it, but yeah, thank you very much
for being here. Excellent. I'll talk to Greg and we'll see what we can do. All right.
Okay, appreciate it. See you next time.
Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on, Utilities Department report.
We typically do that as written, but I do have a few updates that I try to go back to. We are kind of at a standstill on our 8th Street upper aquifer well. We are waiting for the electrical and electronic components. Again, we're hoping to see those sometime this month. For hopeful completion, maybe in April, but I'll keep you posted on that. 16th Street South Tank rehab and coating project continues on. The sandblasting has disturbed quite a few neighbors. It's very loud. I believe we have one more day tomorrow of sandblasting. But it's just unfortunate because you all know what a critical piece of infrastructure that is. So we apologize to the neighbors, and hopefully we won't have to do this again for many, many, many years. Program Seawell, some good information or good news on that. Tomorrow is our minor use permit hearing with the county. It's on their consent agenda. So unless there is the hearing officer pulls it for discussion, that should fly through. On the other side of that, though, there is a local appeals timeline. I believe it's about 10 days. And after that, it can be appealed to the Coastal Commission for another 15 days. So we're not clear for about another 25 days after tomorrow. But you do have on your agenda tonight as a consent item to go out to bid. So we're going to go ahead and hopefully issue that bid package and get that project moving. And then I did have some good news on the water resiliency project. If we're going to do an intertie there to Morro Bay, it would have to be a pipeline. One of the costs that came up was the new South Bay Bridge over Los Osos Creek. We thought we might have to pay up front about $100,000 to have the access through the bridge or to the bridge and for a pipeline. But the county found out that the federal grant that they're using will pay for that cost. So that's a good savings for a potential project cost there. So with that, if anyone has any other questions about the utilities report, I'm more than happy to answer questions on that.
Ron, this is Chuck on the program Seawell. I see a bid package and then end of notice inviting bids, and then engineer's estimate is in our packet. I assume that doesn't go out with the invitation for bids, but it almost seems like it's public record since it's part of our agenda packet.
Yeah, that's typical.
Is it?
Yeah, for all bid packages, there is an engineering estimate. And so, you know, bidders have, you know, it's still competitive. For instance, for the 8th Street Upper Well, we had the engineering estimate added, and I think it was at about $315,000, and the actual bid came in the low 200s. You know, flip side, 16th Street Tank was estimated in the, I believe it was around 300 or 350, I can't recall, but it came in at over 400. So it is a guidance for people, contractors or vendors that bid.
Okay. I just, it took me by surprise, I guess. I hadn't paid attention on my time at Caltrans about that kind of thing. But yeah, if the bids are reflecting that the contractors are putting their own thoughts into things, it's not giving away state secrets there.
Correct.
Thanks.
If there's no other questions on the utilities report, we'll move over to my general manager's report. That's okay, Matthew?
Yeah, please.
Okay. If you recall at our last meeting, I had requested permission to submit a grant application to the state board for a water recycle planning study grant. We have submitted, we did that about 2 weeks ago. I just heard this week that they received it and they're processing it. Again, that grant is on behalf of the BMC, again, which is going to not take a great amount of my time, but I will have to administer that grant, hopefully with help from my staff. And that is to help fund the transient model, which is a key piece, tool for the BMC. I want to talk a little bit about the franchise agreement and the IWMA. The board did approve the assignment on Tuesday, but there is a condition that Supervisor Gibson wanted added that our board would support and, you know, I'll have to see what the exact language is, but it's basically I'm not sure what the word is. It's not approved because we won't be approving the rates, but that will be in support and support the county's effort on that Prop 218 in the transfer. The timing is just really tough here. The county's been lagging behind on that rate increase, and it's going to be substantial. You know, I don't want to indicate otherwise, and that it's going to be a quite large rate increase that I believe, whether it was with us or with the county making that decision, it wouldn't change much, if at all. So anyway, I'm going to have a resolution for you, excuse me, next meeting that will to that effect, and we'll have it as a discussion item so we can talk about it. And actually the county has volunteered a staff person to come out and explain the rate process and the approval process to help us better understand what they're doing. So was just kind of a little bit of a hitch. You know, we agreed to certain terms at our last board meeting to accept the assignment. And so this is one added step that came up Tuesday at the Board of Supervisors meeting. Also with the IWMA, I've been meeting with the IWMA, and there's quite a bit of paperwork and things we're going to have to do. Our counsel, Mr. Minry, knows about those quite well. We're going to have to do some ordinance changes. I was looking at our Title III, and it's in need of help. But fortunately, Mr. Minry has supplied us with a sample ordinance that I think will help us get on our way quicker than if I had to do it from scratch. So I do thank Mr. Minry on that. And there'll be some other items about sending a letter designating the IWMA that will act on our behalf in compliance with SB 1383, which is the organic reduction mandate from the state. And I don't know, Jeff, if you have anything else that you're aware of that we'll have to be doing after the assignment.
Did we do the paper procurement policy?
No, that's right. That's another one. I think we'll be bringing that in April as well. Because the way it should work is if we pass the resolution, it'll be assigned on Friday, April 8th, retroactive back to April 1st.
Okay.
So any questions on that? It's been a really dynamic situation and a lot of moving parts. And as Jeff could probably tell you, there's a lot of things going on at the IWMA to sort all this out so we can move forward with our implementation of SB 1383. Other things, really, the only other thing that was on my list was that I wanted to talk about was our county planning and BMC water resources meetings. Those continue to progress well. We've been meeting once a month. We've been focusing on the water conservation study. The schedule slipped some because the other two water purveyors had not gotten the consumption information that the consultant needed to start doing the calculations. But hopefully it was supposed to wrap up this month. I think it'll be able to get wrapped up in April. I think that's going to be a key study to help our water conservation program and then resolve some of the issues in the community plan that we'll continue to discuss with the county, but this will be a key piece of information that will help move that conversation along. So with that, are there any questions on the general manager's report?
I have a little bit of a question. The large rate increase that has to do with the organic reduction mandate. I realize you're saying at a later date we'd get a presentation from the county, but is that what it is, or is there more to it than that?
Well, no, there's quite a bit more. I have the rate application right here. Basically, there's numerous components in it. There's fees associated with the IWMA, which is about 3.4%. Capital investment, which is they're buying a bunch of new trucks for Mission Country. So that's about 9.5% of it. The digester operation that takes our organic waste, which is a key piece to compliance with SB 1383, is about 6.6%. They have wage adjustments, which is another almost 5%. Recycling processing fee around 2. So you can see there's quite a bit involved. It's not just SB 1383.
So there's a lot. Okay, thank you for, I was curious.
Yes.
So thanks for the broad overview.
Okay, thank you, Ron. Uh-huh. I'm gonna move on to our LOCAC report. Who went to LOCAC this month?
I did not make it to LOCAC. I apparently missed the email reminder late that day, and I actually on our February a calendar that was handed out, I think it says WOMAC. So I did not know even until the last second. Well, actually, till the day after. So I apologize. I did not make the LOCAC meeting.
Okay, let's move on. Parks and Rec, we had a meeting in February, and the meeting was mostly all about the dog park. Ron presented an updated conceptual plan that had removed the parking spaces that we no longer needed on the church side of that property. So basically there was a lot of discussion about what we should do with that space. There had been talk at our, several months ago at our previous meeting about adding community garden space, which the committee felt like was something that could be addressed in the future, but they wanted to stay on target with working on just a dog park. So this go around, we looked at pickleball courts. We heard public support for pickleball courts. The committee ultimately decided the similar thing to the community gardens, to just focus on implementing a dog park. And with that, that additional space, we got some consensus around enlarging the dog park area itself to incorporate more of that space. So adding square footage to the plan. We talked about a little bit about the different items like landscaping, fencing, where to put entrances. We talked about a little bit of water availability, which is something that Ron is going to follow up on, how to get water there. And ultimately, what's going to have to happen, we also spoke about the operation and maintenance, because we still are going to need somebody, another entity, to operate and maintain the park once it's built. So that's an ongoing discussion that we have pretty much every meeting about operations and maintenance. At this time, this plan is going back to get updated with a larger area, but ultimately it looks like we're going to need much more assistance from Wallace Group to be able to finalize the plan and get to the point where we have polished documents and have time, have resources to go out and investigate the different options that need to happen. There's a lot of work to be done. So I think it looks to me like the next steps are going to be to engage Wallace with their remaining volunteer hours to go ahead and put together some proposals of what we need to do to be able to get this thing buttoned up. Anything you want to add there, Ron, from dog park discussions?
No, I think you hit the high points. Again, on the expense and the need for assistance, it was really even that front area. If you haven't been over there, there's quite a slope with erosion problems, and we feel that's going to be substantial in terms of stabilizing that. And again, we'll need a civil engineer to even propose how to do that. So there may be some expenses coming up. We do have a little bit of budget in Fund 900, but there'll probably be something to the board for next fiscal year to decide how much further we want to push that project along.
Any questions on parks?
Okay. Oh, just a comment, Matt.
Yeah.
I caught your last meeting, and I want to commend the committee for staying focused on the mission of the dog park. There was a lot of chatter about community gardens and adding this and adding that. And it would be nice to do everything all at once. But the committee rightfully decided to stay focused on making sure that we did a quality dog park project. And I think that was the right thing to do.
Yeah, thanks for that comment, Jeff.
Yeah, the rest is all good, but I've heard other chatter in the community about, wow, we didn't realize the kind of water bill that Mr. Lee picked up for the community garden every month. So I think that reality is setting in.
Yeah. Okay.
Wanted to comment. I believe I saw the updated plan with less parking in the Bay News, and I like seeing that. I think it's great. The more we can communicate with the public, the better. And so hopefully a lot of people saw that and know what's going on. So good job on that.
Thank you. Okay, let's move to our UAC update from Chuck.
We had a lively committee meeting last month with the rate study information provided. The RS came and talked to us, and it was a very in-depth study. And as I said, the committee discussion just kind of leads itself. It's really kind of it's just good, a good committee. I do wish that I'd have been, as I said, more vocal about the property tax thing. But then, Matthew, I think that you have countered most of my concerns with this bit about how do we handle the BMC responsibilities that we're taking on that just come out of nowhere? That's always been an issue with that committee. And it's nice to have this little bit of extra cushion then to take care of those kind of things. But I appreciate that committee. And I look forward to resolving the rate increase issues.
Anybody have any questions about UAC?
I did. I saw that you discussed a little bit the fiber optic project. And I guess I've kind of heard about it, but I don't really know the details. Does the county get money from that?
I don't really know. All I know, and the reason I have any knowledge of that project, is we went to the county to explore the pipeline alignment for an intertie. They informed us that there was a fiber optic program or a project in front of us, and that they are further along, and then they will take up part of that right away that's available. But basically, that's the only information we really have on it. That's a connector between here and Morro Bay. It's supposed to be for high-speed internet.
I remember seeing, I was at LOCAC when that went to LOCAC. Yeah, I don't think that's the county, though.
No, it's not the project. It's a private project. Jeff Buckingham's company. He's has a number of different companies. This is the one that's undertaking it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was just curious.
Okay, let's move to FAC.
I think we also had a very lively discussion with the water rate study review, which I think Ron did a really great job on that. And we kind of fleshed that out. It was a really great meeting. And then the regular recommendations to approve the warrant register and receive and file the financials.
Okay, any questions about FAC? Okay, I'm going to move on. I know there was not an emergency services meeting, but what happened to that meeting?
That meeting is going to be rescheduled this month.
Okay, so is it likely the same week as UAC this month?
Ron, go ahead, Marshall.
Oh, go ahead. You can go ahead.
We're looking at either March 22nd or 29th.
Okay.
We want to make sure that the chief can be available to talk at the meeting.
Yeah, I see that as really important meeting, and to get the chief there and to really engage those guys. So when we say chief, we're looking at Eddie Moore?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, do we have any director's announcements of district community interest reports at other public meetings? Anybody have anything?
I do. Okay. Unless you want to do it, Chris.
Oh no, I'm just the alternate. I just I really enjoy attending, so I hope you don't mind. I just tag along, see what goes on.
I know. They called her to speak before me and she said, wait, I'm just the alternate.
I'm just lurking here and listening.
Well, since our last meeting, I just wanted to point out one thing that we talked about, because at our meeting, since Lexi Bell resigned and she's working at Cuesta College now as their basically their grant person, we've been looking for a new executive director for the committee. And as of today, we hired somebody and her name is Melody Grubbs. She's a coastal scientist. She has a bachelor's in science and from USC and University of Hawaii. And she's also done some work at other colleges. So she's going to be our new executive director and she's starting on Monday. So the one thing that we did talk about at our last meeting, besides that, that is of interest to us, and I need you guys to kind of pay attention to this one a little more closely, particularly Ron. What we talked about was there's an upcoming grant program, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Fund, which I think you may be familiar with, that's going to provide funding for infrastructure, including green infrastructure, through the EPA's National Estuary Program. So it's not through Public Works or whatever, it's through the EPA's National Estuary Program. They're going to give us guidance and the application process within the next few weeks. And it was thought to that this would be a good opportunity to fund assistance for eligible projects in and around Los Osos. And then Melody will also be working with us on that to explore possibilities. But that was the other important thing we talked about, though, that EPA National Estuary Program Bipartisan Infrastructure Fund. That's it.
Great. Thank you, Marshall. Okay, I don't have any previously asked questions, so I will ask if anybody would like to pull a consent item.
Matthew, I do have a correction I need to note on an item. If I
could. Oh, right. Sorry. Forgot about that. Yes, please.
Okay. I apologize. Excuse me. In 6G, in the motion, I inadvertently have utility systems manager position instead of administrative services manager position. So if we can make that note that change before you adopt the consent calendar.
Okay, so that's noted. Does anybody wish to pull a consent agenda item? Okay, I'm seeing none. Let's move to public comment for items on the administrative committee reports and the consent agenda.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're on your phone, please dial *9. And if you're on your computer, please raise your hand. There's no public comment at this time.
Okay, I'll bring this back to the board. Do we have any more discussion? Well, there's no more discussion. Do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion, Matthew, to receive and file the administrative and committee reports and approve the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Okay, we had a motion by Marshall, second by Christine. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Director Orlowski.
Yes.
Director Womack.
Yes.
Director Gatchel.
Yes.
Vice President Zesenia.
Yes.
President Porcaroy.
Yes. The motion is adopted. Okay. Do we have any future agenda items anybody would like to see? Or closing board comments. I would just like to thank everyone for being here. We've done a really good job, I think, here on Zoom of keeping these discussions lively. I know it's hard when you're talking and it's hard to tell when to chime in and not talk over somebody, but I think we've done a pretty darn good job of it. And if this ends up being our last Zoom meeting, I want to congratulate us for getting through these last few years. So thank you, everyone.
Yeah, Matthew, can I just make one quick comment about Laura?
Absolutely.
I want to thank Laura for all her work that she's done for the district. I know it's difficult, especially now during, this remote location working, but she's done a really, really good job to really make the office much, much more efficient. And as the administrative assistant, she's done an excellent job. So I wanted to give Laura a big, big pat on the back.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Are you on
I agree line? With that. I agree with that. And it must be difficult, especially with one of the agenda items, seeing your position finally recognized for the value that you've provided to the district. Thank you, and the best in Texas. That's right, Texas? I think that's where you're going. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where she's going.
Yeah.
He's in Texas now.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up, Chuck, because not only is she going, she's gone, and she did tonight's meeting remotely.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, with that, enjoy the month of March, everyone. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Thanks, everybody. Bye.